1,504 city residents complete the online survey. So 1,504, obviously a significant sample size, more than enough. And obviously the overall highlight, 70% of our citizens think that we're going in the right direction, which, you know, is, I would say, is probably a personally and as an administration, probably the number that you can get into all sorts of numbers, as you can see in that report. But that's what we want, is we want people to feel like they're going in the right direction.
I mean, 70% of Pensacola Morning News listeners think we're going in the right direction. So, woohoo! You know, that. No, I actually think it's only like 65. Anyway, the mayor yesterday talking about the resident satisfaction survey, good statistical sample, 1,500 out of 50,000. That's actually plenty. You know, this is a total side note, but John, you're an accountant, right? That's your background.
Right.
Okay. I will tell you that one of the most counterintuitive, I'm a pretty good math guy, but one of the most counterintuitive, but it turns out to be true things, is what constitutes statistical significance when you're talking about sample sizes.
You're right.
Because when you first learn that, you're like, that can't be true. And, you know, the general rule is that if you have 1,500 people, it does not matter how big your overall population size is. As long as your 1,500 was grabbed randomly, it's representative. So if you have, say, 50,000 people in a city, and you do a phone survey, and yes, I know phone surveys are fundamentally flawed because who's got the phone, who answers the phone, does it include cell phones? If you bypass all of that technical kind of stuff and you can get generally randomly 1,500 of the 50,000, okay, your statistical reliability of that information, and I don't remember the numbers, but it's, you know, like 90% within plus or minus 2% or something like that, 90% confidence. The particulars only matter to statisticians. If you have a 500 million person base population, well, let's say the U.S., you have 330 million people in the United States, and you randomly grab 1,500 out of that 330 million. Now, common sense, ordinary person math says, well, obviously, that's not a very big sample. That's 1,500 out of 330 million. I mean, it can't possibly be reliable. And what the statistics people will tell you, John, you tell them if I'm saying it wrong, but right. The statistics people will tell you, nope, that's 90% plus or minus 2%. It's the same no matter how big your base population is, as long as the 1,500 were grabbed randomly, right?
It took me a while to grasp that one.
It's so counterintuitive.
Yeah, I know, right?
It's amazing. And here's the other one that'll... If you've never studied this or learned the math of it, or, you know, you just don't believe it, the difference between doing 1,500 out of 50,000 and, say, 5,000 out of 50,000, which you would think, well, that's got to be a whole lot better. I mean, that's 10% of the population. That's enormously improved. No improvement whatsoever. You might as well ask 40,000. Yes, at 40,000 you start to get some improvement, but 1,500 versus 5,000, even though common sense math says that's three times as good, makes no difference statistically. If you did this sample 1,000 times, you'd get results that were incredibly reliable at 1,500, the same as if 5,000. It doesn't matter. And again, same thing at the U.S. If you have 1,500 versus... Even if you ask like 5 million people in the United States, you say, well, surely a sample of 5 million people out of 330 million, that's got to be, nope, doesn't matter. get your 1,500 and quit, because that's all you ever, again, John, this is your background, right?
Yes, it is.
I'm not making this up, right?
No, you're not.
And
you're
when you
spot on.
When you first learn that, you're like, no, that cannot be. Turns out that is.
Just, like I said, it took me a while to put my
It's
grasp
hard
that.
To wrap your brain around that. That's why, by the way, that's why it's important to, you know, when you're paying attention to a survey, which is what that is asking people their opinion about something, it's really important to pay attention to how many people they got. And, you know, it's generally important to pay attention to how they got them because, you know, methodology matters. But if they got 50... And I'm going on memory because it's been like 30 years since I, you know, took any classes on this. But 1,500 in my mind is the vivid breakpoint. That's the key target is 1,500. As long as they got 1,500, you know, it's golden, basically. The flip side of that, by the way, is that if you get 1,000, it's terrible. And if you only got 500, I mean, you're just making up the results at this point. Right? Again, right? Mm-hmm. Isn't that?
You are correct.
Yeah, so it's weird. Statistics is weird stuff. And I know everybody loves to quote the, you know, there's lies, damn lies and statistics, and, you know, it's all about what you ask. And, I mean, it's true that you can, you know, massage your answer. I'm just, that basic mathematical issue of as long as you get 1,500, no matter how big the population size is, and you don't settle for 500 or 1,000, you're good. You've got a very, very reliable sample. Okay, I don't know why I felt the need to get into a math lecture here in 5:16 in the morning.
I was like, excuse me, but it's a little early.
Okay, but, you know, that's like a
But you got to understand it.
Yeah, but that's a little slice of the mathematical idea behind something that we encounter all the time, which is these sample size and, you know, surveys. And, you know, if you're watching the news, you're hearing information that is based on that essential concept all the time. And, you know, if you didn't understand that, you might ask the question, how can they possibly know that based on, you know, or whatever. So anyway, sometimes the weirdest things grab my attention. That's an example. Resident survey says 70% of people think we're moving in the right direction for the city of Pensacola. That's good. The mayor also brought up something yesterday, which I think is very interesting, and I will definitely talk with him about this at 7:35, which is, you know, parking.
We asked lots of parking questions. 81% of our citizens support a discounted parking permit, which we are continuing to work on. That we're just wanting to make sure that when we roll it out, it works the way it needs to work. But we are 100% committed to city resident parking permits in some fashion in the city, because they are helping pay for infrastructure, unlike the folks who are not necessarily living in the city. That wasn't too big of a surprise.
So there's going to be some kind of a resident sticker. And then exactly how that's going to work, well, that's the question. Because there's all kinds of ways you can do this. And he talked about some of those, you know, ways. And, you know, also talked about, like, how do you generate revenue? Like, for example, if we're going to build a new parking structure, is it that the people who use the parking structure pay, as you might typically think? Or should the city just pay for it? Like, it's a feature that we need to have. Well, he says 88%. Of the survey, people said that, no, the users should pay for that, not just the whole city, which is not all that surprising. That's, I think, the way most people think of it, and he said that as well. But this issue of a locals pass or a local sticker for parking revenue is very interesting to me. And not to do two math stories back to back, but it really is a kind of a math problem because, you know, how much do you charge, if at all? I mean, one theory is that locals are already paying their property tax. They park for free. You could do that. I mean, they're not going to, but you could do that. Locals pay some fee per month or per year in order to have a parking pass, you know, and that pass can be all the time. That pass can be like, you know, 8 to 6. That pass could be, say, like, you know, 7 to midnight. There's all kinds of ways you could do that. And then the question is, what does the pass get you? You know, does the pass get you park for free everywhere? Is it, like, made out of gold, you know, that kind of thing? Does it avoid you having to pay in the app for your parking in the space all the time? Or, again, you know, during certain hours or certain days? Or, and I didn't hear him mention this, but I'm sure they considered it, does it get you a discount? You know, because parking is, what, again, it's $1 an hour now, is that right? I know they implemented it. I never pay for parking on purpose. I'd rather walk 3 miles. That's just me. I'm obstinate. But, you know, I think it's $1 an hour. It just, correct me if I'm wrong. You know, maybe your locals pass is 50 cents an hour. So when you pay in the app, there's some kind of different fee structure for you. Or maybe what you could do is you could say you pay, I don't know, I'm making up a number here. Please don't say this as a reference. But let's say you make it $10 a month. Okay. That might buy you $30 worth of parking credit. You know, you could do kind of a leverage scenario where you buy at a discount. You buy parking time at a discount. You could even make it, I mean, theoretically, you could make it so that on your parking app, you buy parking at a discount. Like, you could just, you know, locals get one-third the cost, or locals pay 10 to get 30, you know, like you're buying tokens at the arcade or something like that. I don't know what they're going to do. I suspect it's just going to be a pay this, or, you know, that city residents who live in the city have the opportunity to pay blank and get free parking, and then that free parking is either all the time or at certain hours. Of course, the problem or the issue is that if you don't live in the city, you don't pay property taxes, and you should have to pay more since you don't live in the city. You know, it's the same like when you go sign up for a sports team and your kids are going to play youth soccer or something. You have the resident and the non-resident rate because the residents are already paying property taxes. The non-residents aren't. Let's share the burden evenly among the people who use the thing. Here's the, like, to me, the main question that the mayor did not address yesterday, and I will definitely ask him about this morning at 7:35. The theory for raising the rate on the parking, you remember? It was not that our parking prices are too low. I mean, yes, the parking prices at, what was it, a quarter an hour? That's too low. But that wasn't the main reason. It wasn't a revenue generator. It wasn't like the parking is too cheap. The reason for the parking was what? Do you remember? It was because we want to turn over the paid parking areas, which are at a premium. We want to have people park and leave instead of park and stay. And so we need to find a way to charge enough so that they turn over the parking and people aren't just parking, you know, for 6 hours at a time and, you know, chewing up all of the convenient parking so that nobody else can use it, especially if it's the employees doing it. And he also talked about, would you have, you know, some different structure for employees and, you know, hospitality workers who work in the high demand parking areas. Okay. Well, if locals, who are not even the majority of the people who do the parking, okay, but if residents of the city are, you know, paying in order to get free parking, if that's the way the sticker or the pass works, well, now you've lost the value of having a priced parking per hour that makes cars turn over. And so now you're going to be back to some cars turn over, non-city residents, other cars just sit there all day, city residents. So I am sure they have thought about all this. I'm sure they have an answer to this, but that's one of the main questions that I want to ask them about when we get them on the show here in about 2 hours. 5:23 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
A clue.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent.
Aha. Uh-huh.
So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle. Tide Free and Gentle provides an excellent Tide clean, and it doesn't leave behind irritating residues like dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on your skin.
Case closed.
If it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide Free and Gentle.
Ever have one of those days where your gut just feels blah?
Ugh, yes.
Occasional bloating or gas could be signs that your gut is out of balance, but Align Probiotic can help. Align 24/7 Digestive Support is a daily use probiotic with a unique strain to help relieve occasional digestive issues. It's the number one doctor recommended brand. So when you feel the signs, it's time to try Align. Align Probiotic. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR can help you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
Unterwasser.
That's the hotel.
What?
Where I live.
Nice place?
Yeah, sure, I guess. Is that part of the test?
No. Just warming you up, that's all.
Good morning, 5:25 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
And good morning, gentlemen. President Trump says his tariffs are already showing effectiveness for the American economy. That's what he told leaders yesterday at the quarterly meeting of his business roundtable that included the heads of Apple, Walmart, GM, and JP Morgan Chase. Of course, those remarks come as stock values continue falling. It's starting to look like the beginning of the end now for the U.S. Department of Education. A senior department official announced that over 1,300 staffers have received notifications that they are being let go. Last week, reports said that President Trump was preparing to sign an executive order that would dissolve the education department. And Utah now poised to become the first state in the country to ban fluoride in drinking water. Despite opposition from health experts, their governor, Spencer Cox, says he plans to sign the bill. It was passed last month.
Yeah, and we have a, you know, I think you were talking about top of the hour that we've got a bill working in the state of Florida to do essentially the same thing.
I believe it made it through a Senate committee yesterday.
Yeah, it's working. I don't know that it's going to get all the way there that, you know, DeSantis is going to sign it, but it's certainly possible that by this time in 2 months, you know, adding fluoride to the water for health purposes is banned in Florida. I mean, that's entirely possible at this point. David, thank you so much for the update. 526 here on News Radio 92.3. What else do we have going on? Oh, interesting. There's, you know, the bills that are working in Tallahassee, there are always so many fascinating ones. And here's one that I even had not heard of. There's a bill to revamp the structure of the executive branch, at least in one way, which is to eliminate the lieutenant governor position. Right? To not have a lieutenant governor. Who's the lieutenant governor right now?
We don't have one yet. Because nobody's been appointed.
We have. It's Jeanette Nunez.
I thought that she went to be a college professor.
Did she?
Yes.
See, nobody knows. Even I don't know.
Yeah, she did. That's why I was like, ooh, I actually know this answer.
All right, I gotta. But that's the point, is nobody know. Yeah, you're right, former. That's right. Now, so who's the current lieutenant governor? I don't even know.
We don't have one.
Nobody, it doesn't matter. It's a completely pointless position, which is the point of the amendment. It would be something we'd have to vote on. Okay, yeah, the office is currently vague. Well done, John.
Thank you.
So Jeanette Nunez left to become the interim president of FIU on my birthday, February 16th. Okay, look at that. And so we don't have a lieutenant governor, and the difference in the operation of the government is nothing, no difference whatsoever, because lieutenant governor nobody even knows what lieutenant governor does, if anything. So this proposal would get rid of a completely unnecessary and replace the office with local doge. I'm not kidding. Like, it's to replace the lieutenant governor position with somebody who would basically be the government efficiency chief, and revamp some of the stuff with, like, you know, IGs and oversight.
So here's the question. If something
the
happens.
Commissioner of Government Efficiency.
Oh.
The COGE.
The COGE.
The COGE. The I get you. It's just the. You heard of the Doge? We got the coach. I'm sorry, that's too funny. Go on.
So if DeSantis becomes incapacitated, can't do his job, who
Why
takes over?
Why would you say that?
Well, we are trying to do a line of succession here.
I mean, that's just an odd thing to ask, John.
No, it's not.
Should we know more about what you're thinking?
Nope. I just want to know who's going to be in charge. That's all I want to know.
I feel comfortable that they will put that in the proposal.
Okay, good.
I haven't read this
really,
particular bill,
you know,
so
upset about that.
But yeah, this if we pass this, the
Andrew McKay for governor.
You want me to be coach?
Boy, that would be fun.
I'm the coach, baby. Who loves you, baby? The coach.
The coach.
That's a little 70s. Anyway, so. If this passes, and it did actually went 14-3 through the first House hearing yesterday, it would appear on the 2026 ballot. So we would have to vote on it. We'd have to pass it. At this point, we'd have to pass it at 60%. Who knows? I mean, I guess that's what would probably be in effect. And then it would go into effect. They would have to appoint somebody to hold the office until 2028 would be the first election opportunity, and the lieutenant governorship would be ended on January of 2027. So for about a year and a half, we'd have an appointed coach instead of an elected coach. But, you know, and we are familiar with the appointed coach. His name is Elon Musk. Oh, sorry, Doge. The appointed Doge, Elon Musk. And that is not ever going to be an elected official, at least not yet.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. A 25% tariff on all steel and aluminum imports into the United States takes effect today. The European Union retaliates with a new import tax on some American products.
President Trump says these tariffs are just the beginning.
The biggest win is if they move into our country and produce jobs.
Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick will meet with Ontario Premier Doug Ford tomorrow. Ford apologized to the American people after suspending a 25% tax on electricity exports to the U.S. after Trump threatened additional tariffs on Canadian aluminum and steel.
Fox's Lucas Tomlinson. A party pushing for slowly negotiated independence wins parliamentary elections in Greenland.
The right-leaning Democratic Party has won the most votes in probably Greenland's highest profile election ever. President Trump's desire for U.S. control of Greenland has put the territory in the spotlight. Most political parties and many voters seek eventual independence from Denmark.
Fox's Jonathan Savage. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 53 degrees. It's partly cloudy this morning in Pensacola. Well, the class graduated from Sheriff Chip Simmons Blazer Academy last night. 20 young men, they received certificates and a pocket watch at a ceremony held downtown at the First Baptist Church. The program included several weeks of classes, which focus on courtesy, responsibility, empowerment, and respect.
What if we talk to them about how to be a better man, how to be a man? Let's tell them some of the cautionary tales. Let's talk to them, but let's also give them what they need the most, and that's time.
Sheriff Simmons said the idea came partially from his mentoring experience as a coach and also partially from Hassan Hill, a former inmate that contacted him hoping to make amends to the community for crimes committed when he was a young man. A female Blazer Academy class begins in just a few weeks. Simmons said he's also looking at starting an alumni program to continue the education and the mentoring process. Well, a prescribed burn is set for today in the East Bay River Nature Preserve in Navarre. Santa Rosa County Conservation and the Gulf Coastal Plains Ecosystem Partnership are conducting the 44-acre burn. The county says burns like this are essential for wildfire prevention and maintaining habitats for endangered species. Well, in St. John's County, they're a step closer to becoming home to a new museum. A state Senate committee voting yesterday in Tallahassee to pass a bill to establish the Florida Black History Museum in St. Augustine. One of their county commissioners, Sarah Arnold, tells First Coast News that that museum would be a game changer for all of the state. Rick Scott pushing a bill that he says would hold bureaucrats accountable to the American people. Senator Scott announcing yesterday he and Kentucky Senator Rand Paul have reintroduced the Royalty Transparency Act. It would require government employees and those in advisory committees to disclose the royalty payments they get. Scott says the current law allowed Anthony Fauci and others to receive millions in royalty payments from companies outside of the federal government without having to report it. He says that raised serious questions about potential conflicts of interest and fueled some distrust in our government. Well, looks like two of the major players in the OLF 8 saga are back in. Beulah Town Center and Tri-W Development both pulled and reinstated their offers to the county in recent months. Now the Board of Commissioners are planning to negotiate with both.
We'll see what we get back from them. And, you know, Wes and Allison interact with each of us, I presume, on a regular basis. And, you know, hopefully there is something that comes from those discussions that's worth bringing back to the board. I wouldn't put it on there as a standing item. I mean, we don't have to discuss failures regularly. If it just fails, it fails.
That is District 5 Commissioner Stephen Berry. The board voted to continue working on red line proposals for both of those developers. They'll take that back up at a meeting in April. 534. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
We will see a beautiful day today with temperatures around 72 degrees, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 58 degrees. For Thursday, dealing with a chance of some rain, otherwise cloudy skies, 50% chance of rain, high near 71 degrees. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 62. Looking a bit nicer on Friday with a few more lingering clouds, high on Friday near 74 degrees. Friday night, temperatures dropping near 66. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. Right now, 53 degrees in Pensacola, 54 in Gulf Breeze, little cooler, 45 reported in Milton. Our next news at 6 and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
Why is Bray Jewelers the best place to buy an engagement ring? Come in and see our selection. I promise you, we have more diamond engagement rings than you'll see anywhere in the panhandle of Florida. But it's what you do for people that they don't expect that they remember. The little things that we do, we want to deliver special experiences for you at Bray. We love doing what we do, and we love making people happy. We want every person that walks into the store to feel like you're part of our family. I want everybody to have an amazing experience at Bray Jewelers.
Hey, Kevin, how's the boat running?
Well, you know, last week I started working on the water pump, and now I can't remember how it goes back together.
Dude, stop. Call Key Marine. They'll get you and your Mercury outboard back in the water so we can go back to fishing again.
Key Marine gets the work done and lets you handle the fun. They'll fix any problem, big or small, even if the problem is you don't remember how the parts go back together. Key Marine, your Mercury outboard dealer on Bower Road in Pensacola.
Not stop crying. I've changed him, fed him, walked him around, and he's still crying. Now I'm panicking. What should I do?
It's okay. We're glad you called. We learned during the Period of Purple crying program that babies tend to cry a lot in the first few months of life.
If nothing is working and you need a break, put the baby in a safe place and take a few minutes to walk away and calm down.
During the Period of Purple crying, it is crucial to stay calm and never shake a baby. To learn more, visit PreventChildAbuseFL.org.
This message is sponsored by the Ounce of Prevention Fund of Florida, the State of Florida, Department of Health, and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Are you hungry for news that keeps you informed, is local and dependable? Look no further than News Radio Pensacola on 92.3, 95.3, and on AM 1620. We're your trusted source for all the latest happenings in the Emerald Coast. From breaking news to in-depth reports, we've got you covered. Our team of experienced journalists brings you the stories that matter most to our community. Stay connected with local events, weather updates, and traffic reports, ensuring you're always one step ahead. We're News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 538 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. Appreciate y'all listening. I really do. You know, whenever I meet just people out talking and they listen to the show, I'm always a little bit surprised by it. Like in a pleasant way, like, oh, that's really great. I appreciate that. And it just is, it's a really nice, I don't say it very often, but, you know, for this Yankee who moved to the South and all of a sudden people in the South are, you know, love the show. I'm like, I appreciate y'all feeding my family. Sheriff Chip Simmons is, you know, moderately approved.
We're inclusive.
That's yeah, that's right. That's right. We're a cosmopolitan community. Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Let's just briefly start with the incident at Core Station last week. Of course, massive response, you know, turned out to be nothing. But, I mean, you know, you get shots fired, reported on a military facility, you go. Or anywhere, right?
Or anywhere, right. You know, ever since Columbine and Parkland, I mean, we train to go to the threat. And to go to the threat, you got to get to the threat, right? You have to get as much information as you possibly can, make it to the threat, and then eliminate the threat. So we're pushing. We were actually at the building, and I could hear people saying, push, 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 push. There's this mentality that you got to push. Now, you can't push, you know, when other officers are coming right at you, you got to kind of, you know, be tactical about that. But the response was terrific. Obviously, being our jurisdiction, we had the most people there.
How many officers? How many deputies?
We probably had about 100 deputies.
Wow.
That were there. And then PPD eventually got there.
Uh-huh.
FHP eventually got there. And some other people got there. Again, they're distanced. They have to go to greater distance because it's not
there. And Navy Security came over from NAS Pensacola?
Navy Security was there from the beginning.
Oh,
now,
all right.
Now, I don't know where they came from. I'm assuming they have some right there at Corey.
Sure.
I know when I got there, and it was relatively quick, there were already a handful of Navy police officers that,
okay,
that were there. And participating in a room clearing. We had – and that's part of the complication is that, you know, we don't have their radio channel. They don't have our radio channel. We don't have the keys. They have the keys. Who has the keys? Who, you know, but that happens in every one of these events. You just have to use common sense and say, okay, where is the noise supposed to be coming from? In this case, we did have, because there's nothing to it, I can talk a little bit more about it than I normally would.
Yeah.
We had information that there was an individual holdup in one of the rooms on the second floor. And so
We can't all rush to that room. Some people have to cover, you know, other areas. We're still looking for potential victims and that sort of thing. So we ended up getting to that room, and then we had to tear that door down because we did not have time to wait for a key to come from the key depot, wherever they got the keys.
Wherever the administrative repository is.
So we got ended up getting those buildings cleared, and then we went a complete check of it one time, and then we checked one more time, you know, just to make sure. Mm-hmm. I think you and I chatted in between, or while you were in the second suite.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after the first one, I feel it's important to let people know that everyone's okay, and that at this point, I'm very careful with my words. At this point, we find no evidence of an active shooter, no evidence of anyone being injured. So we're still trying to figure out how this happened and what happened. And from what I understand, there were up to a dozen military personnel that heard what they thought were three shots.
Okay.
When you have this many people calling, a couple of 911 calls, you're going to go there, and you're going to go there as fast as you can, because again, that's how lives are saved. That's how they were saved at NES. That's how they would be saved, should the worst have taken place over at Corey Station. That's how lives are saved at schools, at malls, right. anywhere.
Because in these emergency situations, whether it's a fire or building collapse or an active shooter or whatever the thing is, seconds can make a difference, and certainly minutes make a difference. And waiting to confirm is not the protocol. We'd rather send 100 officers and a half dozen paramedics and then find out it's nothing than not send them and it turns out to be something.
Yeah, and I do need to say that fire, EMS, they were there. They're setting up a command post, which is exactly what they're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Because if there are bodies inside of an injured individual, mm-hmm. we know right where the ambulance goes. We send them right over there.
And you do those trainings all the time. I mean, yes. Not all, but like you do them routinely. Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, we have kind of real life scenarios that we continue to work on. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll critique this one because nothing goes perfectly. But I again, a special shout out to EMS, to fire, Escambia County EMS, Escambia County Fire. And again, we appreciate Pensacola Police coming. It's not their jurisdiction, but obviously we have this relationship to where if something happens in Escambia County and we need them, they're going to come. If something happens in Pensacola, we were going to come and help them as well. So it was in Highway Patrol as well. They showed up.
Had it been several different 911 calls to some building, mm-hmm. Some building downtown or whatever, same response?
Yeah, no, I think same response.
Because I know for a lot of people it was obviously NES Pensacola is vividly in our minds, but it's not that you're extra going to it because it's a military facility. You're just going to it because it's a credible shots fired active shooter threat, right?
Yeah, I think that any shots fired threat is going to get a tremendous response. When you're talking about a potential active shooter, and again, I'd be lying if I said that didn't play into it what happened in 2019. Mm-hmm. We all know that what happened, and we're like, oh no, is this something else too? Because that was a serious a terrorist act. I mean, he died with over 300 rounds on him, so our guys were able to take him out way before he did as much damage as he wanted to do. So there are opportunities. If it's at the mall, then you send as many people as you can, because the mall's so big, you don't want someone to get away, and there could be so many potential victims. So the response is similar in that we're all trying to get there. If you're close, you're going. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. If it's a small convenience store, then obviously there's no need to have 100 deputies there.
Right.
Okay. Hopefully the first 5 or 10 that could arrive can take care of business.
I it's probably going to sound like it's a criticism, and it's really not. I just was curious how that choice of what response to send, only because I actually called in a shots fired in my neighborhood on Friday night. Mm-hmm. And it was like I was kind of napping on my couch and bang, 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 bang. And like, oh, that's not fireworks. And I called it in because I never assume anybody else is going to call it in. And a lot of people talk themselves out of it, right? They say, well, somebody else will do it, or they're not sure or whatever.
Or I'll wait to hear a name, a siren or something.
Right, which is long past. But I was looking on the map, and I didn't see a dispatch unit or anything like that. But you always send somebody if there's a report of shots fired.
If there's reports of shots fired, someone is always dispatched to that area.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll do a check because you may not have been the only person called.
Sure.
Someone else may have called and says, it may have been fireworks, it may not be fireworks.
a third person may have called and said, no, it looks like it's gone now. There's nothing there.
Okay.
So, but we still do a drive-by at least. Certainly if anyone's hit, then we're going to go there no matter what.
Right.
But I can take a look at that one and see what the scenario was and see if they.
And I told dispatch I didn't need to talk to anybody. You know, okay. I just wanted to let them know. And, you know, yeah. if it's a serious thing, we're waiting. You know what I mean? So.
Yeah, well, we usually don't wait for the shots fired calls. Those are pretty high on our priority. Unless someone says we're not sure if we heard shots fired.
Right.
It could be fireworks. And obviously we're going to. And then we wait and see who else calls, because as we're en route, we'll determine it, because things develop.
Sure.
You know, a lot of times we'll get a call to a scene of an armed disturbance, and then we'll say, our dispatcher will say, I'm getting three more calls. That typically lets us know that this is something bigger, and so we'll have more backup.
And as you said, at Corey, it was multiple, and, you know, that was an important part of the information set. We had a traffic stop on 29 that led to the arrest of two individuals on several different drug-related charges last week.
Yeah, we got a couple winners here. William Coleman and John Peters, I guess. We have a good picture of all the drugs. Our narcotics guys that seized this drugs, put it on a piece of paper, separated it, and so the people know exactly what's going on. And they did that because of the different amounts of drugs and different types of drugs. They located trafficking amounts, which, as you know, is the higher amount of fentanyl, trafficking amount of heroin, a trafficking amount of methamphetamine, some cocaine, some Xanax, some marijuana, some oxycodone, and some paraphernalia. So this is a lot of drugs, as you can see. I just you're really up to no good. You're driving around on 29 with all of this different types of. You know,
this is a pharmacy. I'm looking at the picture on your social media page, and when you say piece of paper, it's a. Like
cardboard
a poster
sheet,
board.
Yeah,
it's like it's a display case for a science fair project or
exactly.
something, which is kind of what this looks like.
It does look on display. We
eight
we put
pipes,
it up there.
Three knives, all kinds of different, you know, and then it's kind of funny because, you know, it says, here's crack cocaine, here's fentanyl, here's even more fentanyl, here's heroin, here's Xanax, here's more cocaine. Like, it's just, you're all,
well,
you,
yeah,
your
we
folks
want
had
people
some fun
to know
with
what
it.
They're, yeah. What they're doing. Like you said, it looks like a science project of a loser. You know, just show, on this project, show us what a loser looks like. And then they post this little thing on a poster board.
If somebody had a drug tackle box, this is it laid out on a table.
Yeah, open that thing up, yeah.
That's what it looks
but,
like.
I mean, well, we do joke a bit, but how many lives could be lost from these two clowns doing this amount of drugs? Because trafficking amount of fentanyl can kill many people. And then you mix it with heroin and methamphetamine. I'm obviously proud of the deputy's work that's out there, which is we haven't posted as many of these because as I talk to my narcotics guys, they say, hey, people are kind of running a little bit short of courage with the cars too, getting out there because we're always on them. We have a couple cameras up on 29, and I smile every time I hear that, you know, that we're being effective with regards to proactive and reactive type stuff. And I told them, people like this. You stop that car and you arrest them. If you have to bump them, you have to bump them.
Mm-hmm. My wife and I were in the car the other day, and we drove past one of your camera vans that says Escambia County Sheriff's Surveillance Vehicle. And she's like, what good is that? And I said, deterrence. And she said, oh, no, I get it now. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, we put it in red.
Yeah,
it's funny.
Not hiding.
Those who aren't familiar, we have this van. We call it like the... I don't know, drug eradication.
You need a name. I mean, you got the Rook.
Yeah.
You need a name
for
the van.
Yeah, we had a name. And we put it in red letters. We have like 18 cameras around it.
Discouragement
one. And we just park
one.
It in right away, which we're legally able to park it. And people complain and said, you guys, they know what it is. No kidding. No kidding. There's cameras all over it. It can even talk to them, you know, and say, get away from my car or something like that.
I love it.
But, yeah, we do that, obviously, for a deterrence. And when we have... we don't have manpower that can sit there on 24 hours a day.
I did want to ask you, just because this has been on social media, and, you know, sometimes on social media, they do not get 100% of the facts accurate. There was a complaint had to do with over there on Murphy Lane by the Washburn Center, where there I know there have been a lot of homeless folks. The complaint was that you guys were involved or code enforcement was involved in moving somebody, and as a result, they died. Do you want to maybe
talk about that? That's the
allegation. So I know you like to respond to rumors.
Typically, well, I'll just kind of let, you know, now you can't please everyone. You know, you're doing what you can do. In this particular case, the county code enforcement and sheriff's office and code enforcement works very well. But code enforcement was going to clean this area, this county area, across from the Washburn Center. So they asked us to help move the people just so they can clean it up and then they can go back. So we got there and they say, hey, this is county property. They're going to clean this thing up. Can you move? They packed up, they moved, and then the county code enforcement and the sheriff's office left. One, two, I think 3 days later, unfortunately, an individual does pass away. But consider this. All we did was move them so it can be cleaned up. They're not even supposed to be there, right? So we moved them so it can be cleaned up, and they return back there. 3 days later, the individual, again, tragically passes away, and somehow that's code enforcement's fault. Somehow that's the sheriff's office's fault. And keep in mind, they're right across the street from a facility that is assisting the homeless. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm assuming they already had their gates locked, which not sure why they locked their gates if you're going to help somebody. When you lock your gates, you cause people to camp outside your area. That's just
what happened. And that has been a recurrent, persistent problem on Murphy Lane for quite some time now, yeah.
Yeah, again, I don't want to cast too much shade on people that want to help the homeless.
Right.
But I can tell you that the sheriff's office has given more assistance and has given more information as to where to go to get services. And as the county has brought services to these individuals, and sometimes you just can't, they won't accept services. Secondly, a lot of these people have family members in town. And if the family members in town can't help them, can't provide whatever they need or won't provide whatever they need, what do they expect sheriff's office employees to do? What do you expect code enforcement to do? What do you expect, quite honestly, the Board of County Commissioners to do? Mm-hmm. This is certainly a problem that I think the county needs to address and to tackle, and they're taking steps to do so. On the back of every one of our citations is a list of the resources that are available. We obviously
I didn't know that.
Well, we recreate our ticket just so we can put the information on the back of a ticket. So if you're not supposed to be there, we'll write you a warning ticket. Oh, look on the back of that. If you don't want to be here, if you don't want to get a ticket, if you don't want this to be your life, these are resources in our community that you can go to. And so we're trying to do what we can, but for people to come up there and say, oh, you guys should have done this and that, I suggest they look internally first.
No, I didn't know you guys are doing that, so I appreciate you letting us know. Last thing, we've only got about 30 seconds, but Blazer Academy graduation tonight. How many youth have you guys helped?
The sixth class, and about 20 males will graduate, and we start the female Blazer Academy in about 2 or 3 weeks.
That's the third one for the females?
Third one for the females.
So that's your getting 150, 200 people so far through the program?
Yeah, it's pretty good. In fact, we're about to announce an alumni class for the male side, because we have so many more.
Okay.
And say, hey, why don't you come back and just for about half the time, three weeks, where are you at? Where have you come from the first time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what would you have liked to have seen? And then let's transition from a 13, 14, 15-year-old mentorship program to a 17, 18, maybe even 19-year-old. Do you have a job? Mm-hmm. What kind of car do you have? Do you have any questions now that you didn't have, or your question is different, or is your philosophy different? Let's talk about that, and let's try to help.
I love it. I mean, follow up data, mm-hmm. fix, improving exactly. the system, not just doing it so we can say we did it, but doing it to have the result we want to have. I mean, I love all that. Sheriff Chip Simmons, Escambia County Sheriff Chip Simmons, sir, always a pleasure. Thank you for the time. Always talking with even about things that are, maybe challenges or perceptions you guys haven't done something wrong. And sometimes you do wrong.
There was a time.
When it happens, you fix it, work, make it better, and move on, right?
I may be the one of the few politicians that have actually called a press conference and said, hey, we could have done this better.
Yeah.
I don't recall of any others. And maybe they haven't done anything wrong, but I can tell you that we have an impossible job. And we work at night. We work with drug addicts. We work with bad guys, with guns. And if you consider all that, we do a fantastic job.
Sheriff Simmons, thank you so much for the time, sir.
You bet.
Absolutely. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. When you're going to buy a car, obviously, first choice in terms of where you go, not in terms of what you buy, but in terms of where you go is, do you go to a dealer to buy new, or do you go to, Jimbo on the corner or Facebook Marketplace or a used car dealer, right? All your choices, okay? If you decide not to go new because you don't want to pay the depreciation hit, that's that first couple of $1,000 you lose in value when you drive the car off the lot, as Dave Ramsey has explained to you thousands of times, which is also what I recommend. Then you got to decide between, somebody on Facebook Marketplace or, some corner lot or, a place like Frontier. Okay. And if you've ever bought used cars, I know it feels a lot of times like it doesn't really matter. Used car places are all used car places. I'm telling you from experience that most of the time when I have bought a used car, I have felt some degree of just, you know, about the whole thing. And especially, weirdly, from a lot of the dealers that feel like, I just hope I get out of there and they didn't take too much advantage. I mean, I hope the car doesn't die on the way home. Like, that's the way you feel. When you go to Frontier, at least I know from my experience, when I went to Frontier, it wasn't like that at all. It was just simple, straightforward. It was no pressure. In fact, we wound up buying a car because we were just looking to test drive a car that at the time was kind of hard to find. And the particulars of why it's hard to find have to do with how Honda does their pre-owned certifieds and all that kind of stuff. I won't bore you with the details, but we could not find the car we wanted to test drive. Well, they had one, so we test drove it, and it was great. And they're like, do you want to look at a price? We're like, well, we're not buying for another 6 months. Fine, I guess we'll look at a price. Oh, that's a good price. That's the price? You know, I mean, I didn't try to act too surprised. Can you come down a little bit? Yeah. All right, well, can we think about it a little bit? Because we're not buying a car, you know. Yeah, sure. Called them back the next day. Can you come down a little bit more? They're like, yeah. I'm like, can we buy it? Like, it was that like, that was the level of interaction. And then they do things after the sale to follow up with you that make you realize, oh, this is a different kind of place. Like, they want to make sure you're happy, not just when you sign and take the keys, but 6 months, a year later, because they want you to come back again and again and again. And that way of doing business is just different than the one-time interaction. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years, behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway. Be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Guys, ever had a bad experience in the bedroom that totally threw you off? It messes with your head, your confidence, and suddenly it's all you can think about. Next thing you know, you're avoiding trying altogether because the fear of failure is just too much. That's where Wave Men's Health comes in. Their providers have been helping men overcome ED and providing hope even when the pills and other treatments have failed. Their proven personalized treatments have some of the highest success rates out there. No awkwardness, no judgment, just real results that bring back your confidence and that connection. It's important to get your ED treated quickly so that it doesn't get harder to treat down the road. Wave Men's Health has treatments that online pharmacies only dream about. Tonight is your night for intimacy and connection. Call Wave Men's Health today at 850-266-7020 or visit wavemenshealth.com. Your consultation is discreet and could be the start of something incredible. 850-266-7020 or visit wavemenshealth.com. And let's make tonight unforgettable. Wave Men's Health, making it happen.
Got a junk car lying around. Call the best junk man in this town. Frank buys junk cars. Frank buys junk cars. Got a car that's killing your grass. We'll call the junk car king for some quick cash. Frank buys junk cars.
850-525-2035. Frank buys junk cars.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings before pep talk on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
She doesn't know what she's doing.
Oh, boy, she knows exactly what she's doing. She's driving us crazy and loving every minute of it.
All we need is somebody to lean on.
Lucille. 558 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines this morning. David?
Well, a month-long ceasefire might be coming between Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine's already agreed to a tentative plan for 30 days, but Russia still has to accept. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says his country sees the deal as a positive step, but it'll be up to the U.S. to convince the Russians.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have a deal yet. It'd be premature to celebrate anything, but more progress made in the last 53 days, is that where we're at, than was made in the entire first 2.5 years, 3 years of, you know, kind of significant. A little bit of a mess to get here, but if it gets there.
Listen up.